Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions, with support from the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky and the Appalachian Impact Fund, working together to promote community collaboration, economic development, and education by increasing charitable giving and philanthropic investments across communities in southeastern Kentucky. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening. A crowded high school hallway between classes. Will this sound be heard again when schools reopen? So many big decisions yet to be made before Kentucky kids get back into their classwork. High among them is whether schools can open to in-person learning. President Trump has threatened funding to school districts that don't fully reopen, an edict characterized by the head of the National Education Association as appallingly reckless. In the meantime, school administrators, teachers, students, and parents still lack clarity on what to expect. Cynthia Reeser is here with the latest in our series of interviews with teachers as they try to anticipate and plan.
I'm here today with Aaron Asher, and Aaron is a third and fourth grade math teacher at Hacker Elementary in Clay County Public Schools. And Aaron, you know, anyone watching the state and national news after March 13th heard all these stories about the great new technology tools and how students are able to learn online. But you and I know that many Kentucky students don't really have access to the internet and all those fancy digital devices that we sometimes see on the television. So talk about your experience and the challenges your students had with learning this spring.
So basically, you know, where I teach at, there's definitely not 100% access to technology. I would say there's at least probably 25%, if not more, that doesn't have Wi-Fi, doesn't have devices at home. So, you know, me and my staff, we knew, my coworkers, we knew that this was an issue. So we chose to send home paper packets at this time just because we knew that there would be so many that were challenged at home to use all this technology like Google Classroom and Class Dojo and all these other wonderful tools that just wouldn't be available to them because they didn't have access to it at home.
So I know you did try to use an easy technology tool that could reach a lot of your students. So tell about what was your workaround?
Well, you know, to most of my students, I provided a Facebook page just where my principal and my instructional supervisor was with me in the group. And I gave tutorial lessons every day. I gave examples like links to pages. And I also did like face-to-face videos, you know, once every now and then. But most of the students got to see that. They were on the Facebook page. And then to the ones that couldn't be on the Facebook, didn't have the access, we actually tried to reach out, delivering the packets to them, making sure they got those paper packets and were getting them complete. The thing that I miss the most, you know, technology's great and technology's wonderful, but I miss that face-to-face, getting to even read their cues off their faces, you know, because when I'm teaching, a lot of times I can see through that face-to-face look that the student's giving me, oh, I'm getting this or oh, I'm not. So that was one thing I missed about the technology, but, you know, we did the best we could with Facebook and things just due to the circumstances, so.
Yeah, because you're right. When you're teaching, you read as much from the cues of the students as you do, you know, the grades on their papers, don't you?
Yes.
So in April, Kentucky's big event for teachers, the annual statewide high-stakes accountability test, take place. And so when schools closed on March 13th, I think most of us expected to return in a few weeks, and we thought, oh, the students will still have to take those tests. And I know you mentioned that the teachers were really worried in your school about sending the students home for a few weeks and knowing you're going to come back and have to take those tests. So describe your last day with your students and about the worry of you and your fellow teachers about those state tests.
Well, you know, I'm in third through sixth grade, so I have the K-Prep accountability test every year in April. And my school takes success. You know, we want our students to do well on the test. We want our students to do well all the time. So when we were let out in March, that was a crucial time. You know, that's what I call crunch time in the math world. You know, I've got to get as much covered that I've not got covered. I've got to go back and do review during support block. And so, you know, to be told that at that time we were told 2 weeks is how much long we were going to be out. So to be told that you're losing 2 weeks of instruction, especially my math instruction, we were in panic mode. You know, it wasn't a celebration of, woohoo, we get to go home, snow days. Because even me, I don't even like the January, February snow days. So to be told that, you know, in March I'm losing 2 weeks of crucial time with my students, it was panic for me and my other coworkers. And I also was, this is a crucial time not only to teach the content, but to motivate my students and get in their heads and, you know, tell them they can do their best and they're going to do their best. And well, I was panicking over that too, because every year around like a week before the test, I do some kind of crazy thing to motivate my students. Like the first year I shaved my head into a mohawk. The second year I shaved my head completely bald. The third year I let two or three students picked at random shave my head. So, I mean, just crazy things to get these students pumped up and motivated. And I was not only losing instruction time, but I was also losing time to motivate my students and get in their heads and get them ready for this test. So definitely March 13th was a panic day for us.
And I think you were probably happy when you found out that the tests were canceled for this spring in late March, weren't you?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Tell us some of the things that you and your fellow teachers and administrators did in your school and your district to try to support your students, not just in learning, but to support them in other ways.
Okay. Well, we definitely, you know, made sure they got their packets. We did deliveries of the packets if we had to. The Save the Children organization that's in our district has given out tons of free household items. They gave out Instant Pots. We delivered meals. I even assisted on delivering meals to any student that we felt needed it. They told us that they couldn't get it. Some people were able to come and get the free meals, but anybody that wasn't, we delivered them. We also Save the Children's gave out free milk. They're actually still doing that, free gallons of milk weekly. And we also, me and another coworker, have put together a newscast that we put out almost weekly, if not biweekly, during the school year. So we decided to come together and do a Zoom meeting with all of those students, those sixth grade students that were in that newscast. And we made a very special newscast for the school to be put on our, like, Facebook school-wide group page that only, you know, parents and students of the school can see. And we made a very special just recognizing our sixth graders, recognizing things to do during quarantine, how to properly quarantine, and just entertainment, you know, just to kind of get the students away from the panic of being home or the parents' panic of getting, just provide a little humor at the expense of some of our sillier sixth graders that love to get in front of the camera anyway. So
I think you said that they did some special instructional sort of newscasts and where they taught people how to do different skills.
Yes. They part of the quarantine, they taught them how to wash their hands and use proper hygiene. They taught them how to social distance. They taught them how to do, like, workouts at home because, you know, you were at home. So we had one girl that dressed up in her little jumpsuit, and she was, you know, showing them how to do all these funny workouts. It was very entertaining. One student showed them how to do art at home. It was all centered around what to do at home while you might be getting bored during quarantine. So,
and this was the sixth graders teaching the other students how to do that.
Yes.
Also, you know, typically a teacher grades work. You have a stack of papers, you grade those. Or in some classrooms, you can grade things online. But I understand that teachers were grading work a lot of different ways after schools closed March 13th. So what were some of the ways that you looked at students' work that they turned in and gave them feedback?
Well, we would take them up. We would have turn-in days. And then usually we would come in groups just so that we would be social distancing and grade what was turned in to us through paper, through envelopes and the turn-in stations. You know, it happened about every week that they would turn in a certain amount of the packet, the NTI packet. And then also I provided the option to take a picture on your iPhone, and through the notes, you can like scan the document in and then send it to my email. So that way I can pull it up on my email. Here's their work, and I can look at it, grade it, give them feedback, and then send it back to them. I was always available through email, through the Facebook message of the group page that I had, and I just tried to do as much feedback as I could, basically with grading it and things like that. But that all goes back to, you know, I'm big on, I can tell when my students verbally, you know, hear how they say it and see their facial cues, and that lets me know. But that was one thing we did lack, but I tried to make up for it by providing these documents through iPhones and the turn-in stations and grading that and getting it back to them and just different things. You know, we were all thrown into a pickle and we had to learn how to handle it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we don't know what school's going to look like this fall, but of the new tools that you learned to use or the new skills that you learned this past spring, what are you going to adapt for this unknown school year?
I am already working on creating most of my content into the Google Classroom because we are told that as a district, we will all have Chromebooks to check out and go home, sign out, and, you know, just things like that. So now that every student's going to have a Chromebook, that eliminates the device issue, not having a device. So they will have a device to work on and do things like that with. The only issue would still leave would be Wi-Fi. So we're told that whenever that Chromebook comes into our Wi-Fi system at the school, it'll automatically submit work that was ready to be submitted. So that eliminates that issue too. So we've, you know, our district has worked really hard to eliminate those issues that we were dealt with in March. That being said, knowing that, you know, things could be all online, half and half, you know, there's so many options. I'm definitely putting all of my content on Google Classroom to be prepared to video lessons, put them on the Google Classroom, do all my assignments, and just, you know, use as much things as possible. And then maybe use like the Facebook page that I, like I did before, as a notification of notifying parents, you know, check Google Classroom, because unfortunately a lot of parents might check Facebook before they check Google Classroom. So definitely Google Classroom will be my main focus of where everything in my classroom will be, but I might use the Facebook Messenger or email to notify parents and, you know, get them looking and logging into Google Classroom.
And a Chromebook, for folks that might not know, is a small sort of laptop that is attuned to a group of tools that teachers can use called Google Classroom,
right? Yes, and as soon as that student logs in under their name, when they type in classroom.google.com, they are immediately on their Google Classroom. They don't have to remember any more passwords. When they get on the internet and go to Google Classroom, it's all automatically logged in and ready for them to use.
Okay. So what's your biggest worry about your students learning math this fall?
Math is a hands-on thing, I feel like. I mean, and, you know, I like to be there with my students, getting in the floor. We get in the floor. We do group work. We do all kinds of crazy things. I make up songs. I do all this goofy stuff. So I guess I'm going to have to get over any stage fright that I might have, because I'm going to be putting on entertainment for the parents as well now. So, but, you know, I'm getting down there with them and getting dirty and getting in those groups and things like that. And I'm going to have to adapt weekly, probably daily, of how to get these things going at home. So, you know, that's a worry that I have, and I like to be there with my students, because sometimes they like to tell little fibbers, especially if they're with their parents, and they might say, oh yeah, I get that addition or subtraction. But in reality, you know, that all goes back to that face. I can look at someone's face and say, oh, they're not getting that subtraction. So, you know, are they going to fib to their parents and they're going to think that they're getting it, when in reality they need a reteach or they need a little more hand work, one-on-one work with that. So just things like that, just reaching my students, basically. I want to reach my students. I want them to have success. I want them to be prepared for college one day. And, you know, everything is a stepping stone. You know, it takes, you got to get through third to get to fourth, and you got to get through fourth to get to fifth. So I want them to be prepared for their next grade coming, so.
Yeah, I agree. And let's all keep our fingers crossed, because I want to see my students too.
Yes, yes.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. and talking about your experiences in the Hacker Elementary this past spring.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
That's Cynthia Reeser, a professor of social studies education here at EKU, with Aaron Asher, third and fourth grade math teacher at Hacker Elementary in Clay County. It's the latest in our series of interviews with teachers as they try to plan for the return to classes. Let's dig a little deeper into what's at stake in those classrooms across Kentucky with a look at a program that has been a life-altering game changer for many. It's the latest in our series, Education is Economic Development, hosted by former UK President Lee Todd.
Today I'm talking to Brittany Cox, a teacher in Kentucky's Advanced Kentucky program. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Brittany.
Hi, I'm glad to be here today, Lee.
Well, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where do you go to school? What are you doing now?
Yeah, I grew up in Clay County, which is in the southeast region of the state. I attended college at the University of Kentucky, where I attained a biology degree, and I had a pre-med intent at that point. I did a brief stint in med school, and I participated in both research and clinical laboratory work at UK before I found my way to education. And then I completed an MAT at the University of the Cumberland and rank one work in ed leadership there. And currently, I'm serving as the instructional coach at East Jessamine Middle School.
I mentioned Kentucky's advanced program that you're teaching in now, and I want to give just a little bit of review for that. This series was initiated to try to highlight the connection between education and economic development. And the Advanced Kentucky program really does make that connection. It started in 2008 when the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation won a competitive grant from ExxonMobil for $14 million. There are only six of those given out across America, so they had a very competitive proposal. We won't go into some of the details about the program. There are several components to Advanced Kentucky, but we're going to focus today on the college readiness effort. That goal is to expand access to advanced placement courses, or AP courses. So what are AP courses, Brittany?
AP courses are taught at the high school level, but they include college-level content. Each spring, students take AP exams, and they have the opportunity to earn college credit based on their test score, as well as the college they choose to attend. Some students can earn enough credit hours to enter college at a sophomore standing.
That's outstanding. Now, many Kentucky schools have offered AP classes for a long time. What is unique about the Advanced Kentucky approach?
AP courses have traditionally been exclusively for upperclassmen in the top of their class. There were many requirements to be met before students could enroll, and there's a test fee at the end of the year that may be prohibitive for many families. Advanced Kentucky is special because they open these rigorous learning opportunities to more students. They provide financial, material, and support resources to empower schools to meet students where they are in terms of current learning. Many math and science classes require quite a bit of specialized equipment, and that may not be within the budget for schools across the state. Advanced Kentucky equips classrooms with materials that students would utilize in well-funded settings as well as the college setting. Advanced Kentucky also removes financial barriers for students by covering class or test-associated costs. In short, Advanced Kentucky brings equity to an opportunity that was once limited to a very small group of Kentucky's learners.
Well, one thing that I've learned in talking with you is that even though it's open enrollment and any of these students that want to take it can take it, in many cases you have to recruit students that you think would be able to pass the test or take the test. And they may not think they could do that. So how much time do you spend in recruiting of these students?
Recruiting is handled a little differently at different schools. I think that the most positive approach we've had is presenting it as an opportunity for self-improvement. Selling advanced level coursework to sophomores and freshmen isn't always the easiest task. However, really encouraging them and letting them know that this is going to be a way that they can improve themselves in order to reach whatever goals they have does seem to reach these students. So that's really what we've targeted our recruitment with.
Now, have you found a student in your experience who you felt had the potential they did not feel that they did, and how much they changed throughout that course? Did it improves their self-esteem or their confidence?
Absolutely. I've had many students that came from backgrounds and families that had not had experience with college degrees and things like that. They didn't believe that they were capable of this. They thought they were too dumb to master the content, and they really just didn't think they were college bound. However, during the course of the class, we really focus on how much those students have grown. We look at previous work compared to their new work so they can see that they're making progress. And by the end of the course, they feel that they can do hard things, and that's amazing. It's a total game changer.
Well, that's that transformation you'd like to see in a young life. And when they take that exam, you mentioned that Advanced Kentucky pays for the exam fee. They have to make a 3 to so-called receive a qualifying score, a 3. Does that 5 is the top that they can achieve. Is that right? And are there any remuneration expenses that are for the teacher or for the student?
Yes, they need to achieve a 3 or a 5. Advanced Kentucky has actually provided an additional incentive, and they provide cash bonuses for teachers based on their number of qualifying scores and goals that were set on previous year's performance. And they also provide cash incentives for students for each qualifying score that they earn.
What is this possibility for students to earn if they do pass the test? Is there a
they
fee?
Earn $100 per exam the last time I checked.
And that's a pretty good amount for some of these children if they take 2 or 3 of those classes. So I can see why that would be certainly an incentive.
Absolutely. And when you consider that with the cost of a typical college course, they're really gaining a great value by getting that credit that would not then have to be paid for during their college enrollment. So it's really a win-win situation for these kids.
And you know, you hear a lot about students not being able to finish college in 4 years. The AP classes do help that problem a lot. And we have seen many students at UK come in with significant AP coursework. And it also lets them choose other courses they might not otherwise take. So it's just got a lot of upside to it. You mentioned, too, at one time that there are sometimes weekend events for these students where they get exposed to people other than their own homeroom teacher. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Advanced Kentucky hosts special Saturday review sessions dedicated to what we as content experts consider the highest priority content for each subject. On these Saturdays, students get the opportunity to learn from extremely passionate, experienced teachers who have had success teaching AP courses previously. And what I find very interesting is that teachers are able to see this amazing instruction in action. As a teacher, when I was first beginning to teach AP biology, it was honestly the best professional development I have ever engaged in. I learned so much from watching these master teachers that Advanced Kentucky provides for our students. And Advanced Kentucky also covers the costs for travel, food, small incentives, and presenters to make the Saturday sessions accessible for all of our kids.
The ExxonMobil money ran out after 5 years, and fortunately, the legislature had seen so much progress in that they now fund a substantial part of it. And there are other foundations that put money into it as well, so the program is still active, and I'll give some statistics on that in just a moment. But the thing you just mentioned is important. When we have teachers who teach math and sciences, many times they're the only math and science teacher in that school. And for them to be able to get together with other similar teachers on weekends is a very good professional development experience for them, as you said, for yourself. And so I really applaud that growth experience that's provided for the teachers, as well as what you're doing when you really adopt these students and you carry them through an educational experience that's extremely personal. I'm going to give just a couple of data points on what has happened. There's been 130 schools at this point in time that have experienced Advanced Kentucky. Over 1,000 teachers have been trained to teach math, science, and English, which are the 3 subjects that are covered. And over 60,000 students have been enrolled in these programs. And so it's really done a lot to change the way that a lot of our students who would not have been exposed to this before can be exposed to it. What would you say have been some of the significant experiences or changes that you have personally felt in going through this program?
Advance Kentucky is a group of passionate, true believers. They are not jaded. They get up every day ready to take on the world. They are fierce advocates for all their learners, and they have just this whatever it takes spirit. So as a new teacher, they helped me become better, but more importantly, they taught me to push for new ways to reach my kids. And I learned to help any student find a pathway to excellence instead of just illuminating the regular roads to success. I learned to build kids up to proficiency instead of acting as a gatekeeper for success. It really just, it changed me in a way that I could build kids up who didn't always get that opportunity.
It's so important when some teacher takes an interest in a child, and you're really talking about almost a personalized learning experience for the students who sign up for this. What I think is so important is that we have the opportunity to grow a child's self-esteem and build their confidence so that they can go further. But in the long term for Kentucky, we've got to have a working population that has this ability, has this knowledge in some of these technical subjects, not only so they can start their own businesses someday if they wanted to, but they can also help us attract companies who need the type of educated workforce that they need in this day's industry that is so different. And so I applaud you for what you've done. I admire you for just the passion that you have demonstrated even in this conversation about what you do on a daily basis. Are there any final words of comments you'd like to make for some of our listeners about what they should do to consider Advance Kentucky for their children or grandchildren?
Yes, I believe that Advance Kentucky reaches a population in our areas of our state who may not initially be college bound or consider themselves capable of college work. The structure that Advance Kentucky's put in place for our schools builds confidence and learning skills. And once a student conquers a class that they thought was too difficult for them, they give themselves permission to dream bigger. And those big dreams won't just help our kids. They'll continue to drive our state toward excellence.
Wow. Well, I've been talking to Brittany Cox, an outstanding teacher in Kentucky's Advance Kentucky program. Thank you so much, Brittany.
Thank you.
And Dr. Todd will be back soon with a follow-up, a conversation with Auburn Mattingly. She's a student in the College of Engineering at UK and outreach director for the campus chapter of the Society of Women Engineers.
That includes not only recruiting high school girls to choose engineering as their major, but also introducing elementary school girls to engineering and showing them that whenever they're doing math and science or creating problem solving, that they're doing engineering.
Why does this matter? An analysis by the Kentucky Council on Postsecondary Education projects that engineering jobs in Kentucky will increase more than 11% by 2029, driving the need for more college degrees in the field. Coming up after the break, a Kentucky writer throws open the door on skeletons in the family closet.
My grandfather abandoned his wife and his infant daughter in 1921. And no one in the family, as far as I know, ever knew what happened to him or where he went after that.
And how the pandemic has created
an opportunity, I guess, for us to sort of take it one day at a time and to remember the things that, you know, are blessings and to sort of reflect on those things and kind of cash in on some of what those things promised.
Marcus Wilkerson, Carla Gover's guest in her series Kentucky Songcrafters. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Support for WEKU and Eastern Standard comes from Hicks and Funson. Kentucky lawyers Greg Funson, Kenny Heumann, Kayla Combs, and Shannon Church provide legal representation for auto accidents, medical malpractice, elder care, and immigration law. More information at 859-777-7000. Would you like to listen again to this Eastern Standard or past episodes? Find them online at weku.org or on the WEKU mobile app. Do you have a news tip, a comment, or a question for Eastern Standard? Leave a message at 859-522-WEKU. It might be featured on a future show. Now, back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.